Welcome to the Salem Emerging Leaders Podcast, presented by the Salem Area Chamber of Commerce. Here are your hosts, Jacob Espinoza and Zachary Zalicki.
We are back. We are back. Salem Emerging Leaders, the podcast. We are here with our good friend, insurance guy, Ryan Gilbrick. Ryan, how are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
And what insurance company do you work with?
Can't say.
Oh, you can't say.
No, that's why we dodged it.
Oh, shoot. Yeah. I was going to make a joke from it.
Yeah.
Right. Never mind.
Can you make the joke just without
saying I don't know.
It?
Could I?
Probably not.
I don't know.
You're not wearing khakis.
I'm not. I'm wearing jeans.
Is that okay to say?
Is it okay to wear for an insurance agent to wear jeans?
Yeah.
It is?
Like, I'm fine with it personally.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
All right.
Do you have a preference?
I prefer jeans.
What is your outfit when you're like, I need to make something happen. I need to make an impression today. What's the go-to?
If it rises to the level, we'll go suit. But most days, it's jeans and quarter zip. And
I mean, his face kind of does it all the work, though.
Yeah.
I mean.
How do you say no?
Yeah.
Can't.
You can't.
Cannot say no.
Yeah, and his personality.
Get the look.
Can't beat that.
Do you think the insurance world's kind of changing and evolving in the standard dress code? Because I feel like there was a time, maybe a certain companies, but it's kind of like people
wearing suits. It depends on where you are. You know, the different communities have different expectations of what they expect from you. And I think I think you can be a professional in Salem without wearing a three-piece suit.
So. Yeah. And I think a lot of that's changed too, just with, especially the younger generation. I mean, we've talked about this quite a bit, Jacob, and, you know, looking at what does it mean to be a professional? And I know for the longest time, like both my grandmother, who throw a plug in, was the first woman chamber president here. And then my grandfather, they both worked in insurance, and like all the pictures I've seen of them back in the day, I mean, they're always just like, you know, dressed to the nines all the time. And it's interesting to see how that's kind of evolved. And I like it more. And it also shows just like, who are you representing, right? Like, mm-hmm. you're helping working families all the way up to big business owners.
Right.
The whole gambit, right?
Yep.
I did a Facebook poll. It wasn't a poll, but I just asked the question, like, dressing professionally, what does it mean? Why is it important for you? And is it important? And a perspective that I liked a lot is it's not about you. It's about showing the other person that you respect them, essentially. And so I definitely try to keep that in mind probably more now than I have in the past. But I also want to be aware of, I do think that representation matters. And I've been the person that's at an event wearing jeans and a button up because it was the nicest thing that I had and everybody's wearing suits. And it's like, I feel really out of place. This is not for me. So I'm probably not going to come back. And, you know, I want to make sure we're building emerging leader programming that, like, we think about that, you know, when we're deciding what the dress codes are, because we want people to feel invited and mm-hmm. included as part of the group. But I do think that it is evolving what the expectations are. And I think we're getting more comfortable allowing people to kind of be themselves mm-hmm. and understanding that there isn't like this super rigid defined dress code of what you need to wear. You know, to be where you're at.
And even, I mean, this isn't a fashion podcast, but you even look at like kind of the evolution of fashion in of itself, especially I'd say for like the business casual. I mean, you look at some of the shoes that like Cole Haan makes now, they look like tennis shoes, but they're dress shoes and they feel like tennis shoes. They're super light. So you can see kind of that changing where it's like just this like modern suit just kind of looks a lot different.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm excited to have Ryan here because he's done a great job building a team, mm-hmm. building a business, and moving from that solo entrepreneur space to creating a team and actually being a business owner as opposed to having a job that you do. It's a big leap, and not a lot of people are able to make it successfully. So I'm really excited to hear from you and your experience. And I'm curious to hear, I guess, to get started, what was the biggest obstacle that you faced when it was time? You realize like, I need to make a switch. I need to bring somebody on this team if I'm really going to grow. And I'm kind of curious to hear the story and what you had to work through.
Yeah, I think that a big piece of it was making the decision that I was going to run a different model. I was going to scale my staffing and my infrastructure, and that we were going to do it differently. And that involved obviously some financial risk and having to identify who is it going to be and what are they going to do? And how's it, you know, if I'm going to go from, so in my office, we went from 3 to 8.5 in 3 months. And, you know, that's more than twice. We more than doubled our staffing, almost tripled it. And just being really clear on what the roles were and finding people that were good for those roles. And if it wasn't going to be, if everything wasn't going to directly involve myself or, you know, my lead staff person, then how are we going to do that? And shifting gears and managing and talking about culture. And there was so much to begin to define. But I think making the decision and taking that leap was the biggest step, I think, was the first one.
So first making the decision and just, hey, I'm going to make this happen. What's next? What are the steps people can take to do this successfully? And maybe sharing some things you learned along the way.
Yeah, I think the timing was really important for me in terms of being able financially to support the effort.
Were there a certain amount of months that you knew you'd had to have money for as far as payroll?
Yeah, I think that I was set to solve the first 6 months. That's a magic number in our world because that's the auto insurance renewal in Oregon. But I was set and prepared to handle that 6 month window and know that as I looked at typically like in our world, like each desk, you may have negative margin for a little bit, certainly what people are learning in your training and I looked out and said, I can handle this for 6 months and we'll have a really strong sense by the end of that time. And kind of making those plans, like how are these positions going to help my business, you know, continue to do this in the long term? And it's worked out. I mean, we're not at 8.5 anymore. We went from 8.5 to 5 for various reasons. Staff didn't work out or left or, you know, some of it were hard decisions. And I'm thankful that in this last year that all of those departures were amicable and we're still well connected. They're all on good terms. But yeah, we had a plan and for the most part, it's worked out. Now we're in a different normal. Part of going from 3 to 8.5 was knowing that there would be probably some attrition. And if there wasn't, awesome. We would be all the better for it.
An activity I do with clients that are making this same transition is I have them write down, like, what is your org chart going to look like in 5 years? Like, let's map this all out. And then next, let's take everything that you do and long list it. And then take from that list and you kind of put it under each of these different roles. You're defining what these roles are going to do. Did you do something similar to that?
Yeah, there's Troy Korsgaden wrote a book in the insurance industry. And in that, when he was first starting, he identified every position in his office and he put his name under it. And then over time, he slowly began to replace those positions with other people's names. Jacob, you and I were talking about the One Thing book, and I had a friend who kind of walked me through some visioning that preceded this decision. This decision to increase staffing and change the model a little bit, take that risk, was largely over identifying where I wanted my agency to be. So even now, I have an org chart. It's on my desktop, org chart 2030, and it's kind of built out, and it's much broader and bigger thinking than where we're at today. That hopefully will serve my customers for a long time, but also allow us to serve this community and just do a good job. And so these initial hires were a part of the first steps of that in beginning to introduce people who will build expertise in a certain area. And step one of going from 3 to 8.5 was having an office manager who would help me think through people and production and encouragement and training and accountability when we need it, but that I wasn't even going to be taking that on alone.
How about onboarding new? I want to talk about onboarding new employees. Sometimes I hear managers say things like, why do I have to do everything around here? And when I hear that, it's like, well, here's the problem. You're a micromanager. And so everybody's scared to actually make decisions on their own. And you probably are also not great at delegating, right? Because if you aren't specific on who owns the task and what that what needs to be done and when it needs to be completed, people aren't going to do things, right? People are generally not showing up to work looking for extra work to do.
Right.
So when it comes to onboarding and delegation, what are some things you've learned through the journey of leadership works well?
I don't think this is a new thought, but it's worked well for us to have people shadow for a period of time so that they can learn by watching. And it's not just, you know, weeks of being talked at and taught. You know, our brains need time to absorb and implement and sort out all the information. And certainly our world it's more than one can know. It's why we believe in specializing in my office. And, we encourage, I think we kind of try to help define where should you feel the freedom to have autonomy and where do we want you to do it our way until it's time for you to kind of, you know, take the training wheels off. And, I would think for a new staff person answering that question, where am I safe to try something or implement my own thoughts? I'm sure that in most industries, a new employee, you get that sense of like imposter syndrome, right? Like I shouldn't be here. I'm not qualified. I don't know enough yet. And, often the people that we hire that, this is a new space for them and there's a lot to learn. And so we want them within reason to ask all the questions that they need to make some decisions. And then we try and encourage like an ongoing feedback loop where my office manager or I are regularly meeting and asking questions. And we're certainly listening and coaching along the way. So that if somebody takes a risk that's way out of bounds, like we catch it early, but it gives them some room.
Is there a lot of people in your office too, or maybe past employees that you had the idea that they're going to open up their own insurance business at some point? Because if I'm not mistaken, you were an employee for a business before
agent.
And I know that's kind of common in your field where you have employees and their goal is to eventually just kind of open up their own shop. Do you have employees now that have that mindset?
Two of my employees are thinking that direction. And certainly the moment that we know that that's a thought for someone, we try and position to coach accordingly and prepare them for more than just what their current role provides. And my previous bosses, they knew that was an aspiration for me and they prepared me accordingly. And I got to see different sides of the business and things that an owner is going to have to think about that an employee might not. And yeah, so we actively look for folks like that. I think that, you know, in many ways that opportunity was given to me and I'm thankful that I had it and that I got to start not having to learn everything on day one, but I was years into my journey by that moment. And so, I think it's ongoing. A large part of what we want to be for others is a place to come and learn without having to learn on your own dime and make mistakes on my dime. And there's certainly other agents in the area who think similarly. And then they can launch from there and they'll have a track record to lean back on and a story to tell.
An experience.
And a big deal when you come into the industry and you open your own business and in many times some people start from zero, but oftentimes they don't. They start with someone else's business and taking over for someone. And those customers are looking right away for what level of expertise are you bringing? Mm-hmm. And it's not that someone who's starting from zero can't provide value, but obviously that's one of the questions that customers will have is who's this new person? And
do you see a difference in in like the work ethic and the amount of questions and, you know, the time they put into the kind of the business side as well from an employer standpoint. Do you see that in your employees that do have that vision and that kind of that career trajectory? Yeah,
certainly there's a level of ownership that, I mean, I feel like I'm super thankful for my team and the level of ownership that all of them have. My lifers, they who will be with me forever, as far as we can guess, they have a high degree of ownership too. But yeah, they're different ownership when someone is preparing for their own thing. And definitely, like you said, like asking different questions, paying attention to different things, maybe not just the day to day, but also the much larger picture. And I certainly feel like for those years of my career that I was asking different questions and thinking differently than sometimes the folks around me who didn't have the same hopes.
Is there a way in which, because I know from that kind of ownership perspective as an employer, you have to create a kind of a sense of culture with your employees and the people that you work closely with to create that culture for where people are like, this is, though I'm an employee, like I feel like I own part of this. Like this company in some way. Is that a culture thing that you've kind of instilled in your company and, you know, and from an employer standpoint?
I hope so. I think so. We try.
What things do you try to do that?
The one, I believe inviting that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're bringing on a new employee, we'll talk about that. If this is a hope for you, like I want you to talk about that because I can help you differently once I know that. So I think a level of transparency, my leadership style is very transparent anyway. I would say oftentimes it can be to a fault. I might overshare, I might over worry. But I think that does foster a level of getting to see kind of behind the curtain, if you will, for that person. The fact that I've been through it, I've been on both sides now, right? I was an employee of an agent, and now I'm an agent. So I can bring a different lens often to that. And we try to, so that we foster that level of ownership and walk people through that pathway. And yeah.
I think that kind of culture is essential for any business, small or large, like creating that sense of ownership for employees. I feel like from a work ethic standpoint, it changes things from the way in which they interact with customers and clients. It's to me and the services that they provide, I think it's imperative.
Right. Building that ownership is challenging. I love the transparency call out because I think the more that not only our teams, but I think that even our customers, like the more that we show them behind the scenes, it really allows them to get engaged and understand, you know, what the thing that they're actually investing in. Like reality TV is popular for a reason. People love seeing that behind the scenes look at what's going on. And I think the businesses that are doing a good job of that with their employees create these raving fans. People feel invested in the process, so that now they're invested in the results. But I think you can also do that with our customer bases as well, where we kind of are able to share early, which is what we're trying to do with emerging leaders, you know, with this podcast and some different things, but sharing early and people can really contribute to building. You've built your team over these last few years, but over the last 2 years, things have changed drastically. And as a small business owner, I mean, you don't have a lot of time to begin with. So I'm curious, how have you navigated this shift and what are some trends you're seeing in the current workforce?
I mean, obviously, there's significant labor challenges right now for employers. It's a unique time to think about all of the work from home, the exodus of kind of the generation that could retire. Many did and won't return to the workforce. And that has, you know, this low unemployment rate and you don't go far when you hear business owners talking about finding people and how hard that is. So, you know, going to 8.5 and now back to 5 and looking to hire more. We're finding it challenging. Fewer applications for job postings, less qualified than what we might be used to. And so there will be a challenge in front of us to kind of get back to that level. And it's going to involve coaching. It's going to involve patience. It's going to involve, you know, a give and take. Certainly, if we're going to take the chance on somebody that we might not have hired a couple years ago because we would have had more choice, thinking differently about the experience that we're giving to the laborer. But to answer the question, like, what, you know, from a time standpoint or from a management standpoint, like, what have I had to do differently than the years where it more, our agency more directly involved, me doing a lot more of the day to day. I think for me, it's the empowerment of the folks I have on staff, that have experience and that degree of ownership, like we were talking about, and meeting with them regularly, inviting their input, implementing ideas, just getting into that space of it's leveraging leadership, empowering them. And they do a lot more of the day to day now, which frees me up to think more about coaching, more about bigger picture. How do you solve this labor problem and being in a different space? It involves, for me, has involved leveraging outside resources. So we've used outside coaching training programs to get more voices, more diverse voices in coaching my team. It's not just my voice anymore. Using, you know, other businesses, local, you know, outsourcing my accounting and my bookkeeping, outsourcing parts of our hiring process. And, I think that with scale comes the ability to do some of that and the necessity to do so.
Yeah, definitely a necessity right now. Talking about outsourcing, and in a previous conversation, we had kind of talked about working from home, where you can't really manage what people are doing, right? They're at home. There isn't visibility to it. You really have to be focused on what's the outcome. I need this person to contribute to the team, and then kind of reverse engineering it and coaching it from there. Are there tools that you're finding out there that are helping people be successful in this space, or what are some things that you're starting to explore? This is brand new. I think everybody's still figuring out how to create culture, you know, in a metaverse type of a world. But
yeah, I have two remote employees at this moment, and both fantastic women. And but yeah, I mean, to our previous conversation, oftentimes when someone's in person, and certainly as anyone who's been in management for any period of time, we're used to seeing and responding, hearing and responding, observing and coaching to what we observe. In a work from home world, that's just way less present, right? And so we are learning that we have to ask a lot more questions of our employees, help them feel safe in bringing challenges to their managers. How do I say that something's not going well to my boss? And can I own that and still work here? Can I own that? And is there grace to improve? How do we coach that unless someone is willing to kind of self-identify some of those things? So there's in many worlds, not as many always available to my agency specifically, but you can listen in on calls and things like that. But oftentimes I believe that in coaching from afar, it's going to involve creating space where the employee feels safe being vulnerable, mm-hmm. and knows that there's going to be a ramp for them to improve, and that they're going to have your support and encouragement and training along the way. They have to be able to trust that you're going to do that.
Is there a change from your perspective in how you measure success, where you have individuals working from home, and maybe you put, you know, if you had kind of a chart of like, you know, we put, or you as an employer put 50% of success measured on the amount of time they're in the office, opposed to the results that they have from bringing on new customers or clients or whatever it is. Have you, with the people working from home, is there a shift in the way of you, that a way that you've looked at success differently because you don't have that option to say, you know, they're putting in the hours every day and I see them here, where they're, you know, if they're from at home and maybe they wake up a little bit later, but they're still producing. Does that change that dynamic for you?
I don't know if I have metrics around it. I feel like from a soft skill level, we've had to adapt to just, like I was previously saying, like we want to create space. Mm-hmm. And as long as what we're hearing from them is that they are giving effort, mm-hmm. Hearing feedback, improving on where they've been coached, yeah, I think that there has been a shift, at least in my mind, mm-hmm. And in my office manager's mind, that we are going to, we have to give more grace.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about, we were all remote for a minute, mm-hmm. at least in my agency, and being in that world by yourself, mm-hmm. to handle, I mean, me and a computer and a phone line, mm-hmm. it's not the same as working in person collaboratively with a team. And I think we've all seen that, right? There's still this high demand of an ability to work from home, but there's also this kind of counter movement of, gosh, we miss being together. Mm-hmm. And the synergy that comes from that. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing a lot of businesses, I think, you know, working on flex approaches or hybrid approaches to how can we give both? Yeah, it has involved a movement on our part to, you know, maybe focus less on some of the metrics we would have counted on in the past.
Yeah, I think a lot of the work from home is a necessity right now because we don't have childcare for people, right? Or childcare is extremely expensive when it is available. So it doesn't take much for the cost of somebody watching your children to outweigh how much you're being paid at your work, even if you're making a what would have been previously a livable wage. So I think that's something else that I think about is, you know, if we can solve that problem, does it allow people? Because also just getting people out into the community. For a lot of people, their workplace, that is their community, mm-hmm. right? And now if they're working from home, you got Uber Eats coming to your house delivering food, like you're not getting out at all. You're just in your house and you're scrolling Facebook arguing with people. Yeah, right. So like how do we make sure we're still encouraging people to get back into the community? And I love that you're talking about the flex approach and, you know, what works for your team, because it's, I think at scale, we try to find like one size fits all solutions, but as leaders, a lot of it is like listening and how do I respond to the needs of my team? So, and I mean, I think the way you take care of your customers, I mean, you've won awards in the past as far as, you know, being the best agent in Salem, which is incredible, just really speaks to how much value you're putting on the people on your team. And on this podcast, we really like to make sure people know how much they are appreciated. And Ryan, you're doing a great job in our community. So thank you, my friend.
Thank you, guys.
One quick.
We're gonna keep talking a little bit, but
you know, one quick story that I remember Ryan telling me. This was almost a year ago. It was when we had the big ice storm that happened, and you and I went and got lunch about a week after that happened, and we're just talking about, you know, the importance of business and community and what does that really mean. And you told a story about how you had your employees go out and help just drive around neighborhoods and help people clean up their yards, just walk up. And I told that story on two radio shows. I think I wrote an article about it. Like I love that story. And I think that just, you know, speaks again to the culture aspect that you create and kind of the leadership aspect that you create as well of, yeah, I'm in business, but I wouldn't be in business if it wasn't for, you know, the people in this community and you giving back and, you know, having your employees go and help and you going out and help. And I just, that story to me, I will repeat over and over again. I just think it's awesome.
It's a funny time. Like that was a crazy moment as an insurance agent. The expectation is that on the worst day for everybody else, you're there and available. And we talk about on my team, like your job one is to be safe. Mm-hmm. And once you're secure, your family's safe, and the expectation is you do what you can. So that may mean you, if we know there's freezing rain in the forecast, you're taking your laptop home because you may not be able to get to the office. Mm-hmm. And that day, or that couple days, if anyone remembers, it was kind of nationwide weather event, right? And we lost systems based on some weather in Texas, of all places, where you'd think it'd be safe. But we were out phones and for a period of time, computers. So we were writing things down and preparing to help people. And so my customer care team was in the office and helping and writing like crazy and fielding what we could. Obviously, social media allows us to communicate differently than we might have been able to in the past. But for my new business team, wasn't a lot for them to do that day. And it probably would have been inappropriate for them to be having conversations like that on that day. And so one of my big things is in most situations, there's something you can do. And a lot of people will sit around and complain about how hard it is. One of the agents I worked for, a mentor of mine, said, "I love it when things get harder because everybody else stops and we will just keep going." And that day, and you know, it was right after I expanded the team, like we were talking about, pretty early on in their experience. And they said, "Well, what are we going to do? I mean, can we just stay home?" And I said, "Well, come in. If you can get here safely, come in." And he said, "Well, it's not that we can't do anything today. I mean, this is our moment. This mm-hmm. is why people need us. So who knows what we'll find or how much value we'll provide. But, you know, if you guys will bring your work boots and hop in his truck and drive around the neighborhood, and if you see somebody working, I want you to jump out and see if you can help." And they did. I mean, they had a neighbor a couple blocks up the street from my office, and they're helping him chop up wood in his yard from a tree that fell. And there was a lot of that, hauling it away and, you know, a lot of people in that time. But it was pretty cool because they got to see that in a world that can often be transactional, in a moment it comes to life, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously there's contractual things behind products. But at the end of the day, we're here and we have the ability to go show up and they can make a connection with a neighbor. That's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
So we have a new segment, Ryan. You're going to be the first participant of the Salem Emerging Leader Hot Seat. So are you ready? We have three questions. We're going to fire at you and we're going to see how this goes. But you're the very first.
I like the look on Zachary's face right now.
we may have just made this up on the spot, but I think it might be a thing.
How many questions do you have? We'll have to cut this part.
No, said three.
Well, we always say we're going to cut it, but people love the inside look, you know?
I'm just curious what three questions you have, because I have a question.
You have one.
Yeah.
So the first question.
Go for it.
What's a book that you have recommended more often, probably most often, when people ask you for a book to read, and why?
Well, I believe that the best book I feel like I've read for me is The Infinite Game by Simon Sinek. Mm. And in that, I believe that we're playing a game that can't be won always in business. And when we come to grips with that, it kind of opens up our eyes to the more important. So I like sitting in this room with you guys and thinking about what happens through the chamber here and in this community. And even listening to this podcast this morning and listening to my friends, Josh Kay and Jennifer Martin and some of their comments. And I believe that business affords us an opportunity to connect with community and make a difference. And this career and this life will be over before we know it. And what we do with it, you know, you get one shot to live it. And we're going to look back someday and we're going to have thoughts on our own lives. And I'd like to be proud of that. And so I think Infinite Game paints a really good picture of winning the real thing.
I love that. I love that.
All right. My question, and I'm stealing this from one of my favorite podcasts, but to me, it's one of the best questions. What motivates you more, the thrill of victory or the agony of defeat? And I can define those better if you'd like.
No, I think I get it.
Okay.
Unless you want to.
So the agony of defeat is the Michael Jordan mentality, that like winning's great, but I don't want anybody to beat me. The thrill of victory is, that one's a lot more simpler. Like you strive and put all this work and effort into something because you want that thrill of winning. And winning can have tons of different definitions.
Is this a Michael Jordan conversation right now?
We're not having that because you guys will lose, but Well, we should actually have just a Michael Jordan, LeBron James podcast, by the way.
A different, like a different podcast where every week we just talk about Michael Jordan and LeBron.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe.
I would say the thrill of victory for me, I was with three friends of mine who are also insurance agents, and we went away for a weekend and just tried to do life and check in on each other and see how we're doing in our leadership roles on our teams and in the community. And we were listening to a podcast segment together and then kind of walking through it in the weekend and reflecting on it together. And it just talked about how short term the motivation from pain is, pain or fear. And so, I mean, I'm sure I have moments where I'm maybe more motivated by the agony of defeat, but there's something about hope that is longer term and everlasting. And thinking about my team, you start putting mm-hmm. names and faces and things on it, then not that I, you know, pain for them is equally agonizing, but I'd like to see them win, see them get to where they want to go in life, and certainly have those aspirations for myself and my wife and my two boys and this community and all those things. But I think it plays a longer game. Hope does. And so I think at least that's my ideal answer.
I like it. All right. Third question. You're given $1 million to build something in Salem. What are you going to use that money for?
Oh man. Funny listening to your podcast this morning with Josh and thinking about the housing crisis and he talked about youth fields. And I know some folks that are talking about creating space for more youth fields, turf fields specifically, things that could host and create a regional center. And obviously in Oregon, we deal with some rain sometimes. So something a little bit more for that. I also sit on the Isaac's Room board and watch as they and other organizations too, but I get to watch a little more closely as they work with youth in this community who've, you know, had power taken from them or gave it up themselves or for whatever reason are struggling. And I think just in investing in that infrastructure, I'm not sure if I would use it all in the same spot. But it feels like impacting youth is the way. You know, we are on the Emerging Leaders podcast. So thinking about investing in the next generation, it feels like the way to create the most long-term impact. And certainly Salem is blessed with multiple organizations who do that at a very, very high level.
That was a long-winded non-answer, right?
Yeah, it was. I don't know about building any specific thing, but...
Okay. I don't know. We need to have a consequence. So if you don't answer the question on the hot seat, you take a shot or something like that.
I like that. Just like that. Ryan's like, oh, wait, what?
Like, what did I sign up for? Fireball.
I'll give it all to Isaac's Room. Is that a better answer? I'll let
them?
Mark and Tiffany decide that.
Is there something you'd be like, I'd hope they use it for this?
I am so proud of the work that they've done with Isaac's. And I love the concept of a nonprofit that operates through a business, social entrepreneurship. I would love to fund their next thing, their next location, their next business. And maybe it's not in the coffee space, but watching them provide that kind of capacity for young people. Maybe a third location.
I love it. No, Mark and Tiffany do incredible work for our community. Back in my younger days as the Kid Espy, a rapper, I was very grateful to have the Ike Box as a place we could do all ages shows. It was the only place in town that would allow that, other than like a donut shop that would just let us randomly set up speakers and rock the crowd in exchange for a dozen.
I think you need to make donuts. An encore appearance at the Ike Box, don't you think?
Maybe that should happen. I know they tried to do like bring some concerts back when they were doing fundraising. I don't know if anything ever happened with that, but that could be cool. Maybe I'd get more than 20 people to show up now, so it could work.
Zachary and I will be there.
Yeah, I got two. That's all that matters. Two of my kids can come.
Boom.
Shout out. Ryan Gilbert, thank you so much for joining us on the Salem Emerging Leader Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you like, leave a 5-star review, subscribe, share it with 10 friends, all that fun stuff. We want to get the great news of things happening in this Salem out to the community, and we can do that with your help at a much quicker pace. So we appreciate you. You just got done listening to the Salem Emerging Leader Podcast, and we appreciate it. If you look in the show notes, you will find a link. If you click on that link, you'll be able to subscribe to the Salem Emerging Leader newsletter. We want you to be in touch with all the incredible things that are happening in this city because of people like you. We appreciate you. I hope you have a good day.